explain Bhakti Yoga to people who don't know Bhakti Yoga and not look like a weirdo?
No, what? Not look weird. Ah. Strange.
Yes, yeah, strange.
I didn't get the question.
How to explain, or like, for example, in my daily life, how to explain what is Bhakti Yoga about, what is Vaishnavism about, and not seems weird or something like
a bit komisch erscheint,
sect or something.
Yes.
Yes, because as soon as people hear Krishna, they seem sect. So it's
yes,
fortunately.
Chandra, something to say about it?
I think they will see you. Actually, I'm just looking always if there's someone really interest. When this is there, I think that we cannot have a formula. It should be like this and this and this. It's just like a very natural flow. And for that's why we are so happy to have a very difficult path to come here. You know? But actually, it should be like this. You know, it's not. You can go in the train and you can have a prayer. Oh, my Thakurji, I want to speak about you to someone. Can you send me someone from inside? And you see, suddenly it will happen if you know that desire. But that soul suddenly feels the urge. But I always, it must be like an interest. It's something very interesting in the Sangha of Kripaluji in Vrindavan. He's a wonderful, special sadhu, Kripalu Maharaj, Prem Mandir.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh? There, it's like the thing is, when you come to the ashram, it's like the premise, you will study for 10 years. And you don't speak and preach. You know, it's not that always, sometimes previously in the temple, we had two Vaishnavas here who were in my Bhakta course. You know, this was a crash course in the absolute truth. That time it was painful for me because it was 3 months and then there were preachers already. They were sent to preach. It was such a pain in my heart because I just saw in Christian monasteries, you study 8-year theology, and then maybe you're allowed to give a mass or something. But, you know, it's something not very serious. And I liked it, what Kripaluji had. It's a certain seriousness. It's not always that point of sharing, but it's like an inner overflow of the heart. And I know, you know, then naturally things will come. And nothing will be strange, that every soul will 100% know. This is what I was looking since eternity. This is just one little approach. I think you wanted something else.
No.
No, but she didn't want something else. That's
it. No, she wanted something else.
She said no.
She wanted, you know, how to explain things.
Yes, just to find, not to convert someone, but just to explain my relatives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what Krishna Chandra did mention is valid, important point also, that sometimes we very easily, very quickly feel like entitled to represent the whole tradition to the world after 3 weeks or something, and we ourselves are not very much aware of anything. And whatever we understand or think we understand probably is understood in a very distorted of immature, fanatical way, without bad intention, but it's just how you process things. It's like when your father first explains you a few things when you are 4, 5, 6 years old. I mean, you understand something, but that level of understanding. So how much you can represent your father to the world. You know? My father meant this, and he actually told me this, he meant that. And so I think there's place for some humility in that sense, at least from the place of not trying, like, I think, okay, I will try to conquer the world now. I will make the whole world the Bodhi Vaishnava when I'm not myself fully converted yet. You know? Because what's conversion? That's, I mean, now I have a name. So now I'm a devotee. Mm-hmm. Before that, I was a non-devotee, and now I'm a devotee. By the way, I don't like the word non-devotee, but that's another conversation. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we have this, I'm not saying it's your case, but sometimes we think this magical shift now, so I'm now going to devotion. Yesterday I was not, now I am. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened between, now I am. And conversion is a process, right? Like Diksha Kale, Bhakta Kale, Mahasamarpana. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, when the moment of Diksha comes, when you have made a full offering of yourself to Krishna. So you are start to
mean initiation.
So you start to think, okay, Diksha means I made of my whole self complete offering. So you start to question, do I have Diksha? Did I receive so far? If I receive it, what did I do with that? So then we start to understand Diksha is a process. It's not just a one-time, one-moment thing and there. Initiation is initiation. You are initiating something. It's the initiation of something, the beginning of a process, right? So that on one side, no, like we shouldn't feel like, okay, now I'm initiated, I have my guru, so I'm supposed to talk to everyone about Krishna and convert everyone. And not sometimes these ideas may come, like, I mean, from a very non-natural way. That's on one side. Of course, there's also a natural way of extending to others what I'm doing. As you say, my family, your parents may ask you, like, what's that thing you have in between your eyes? Dibyangana, maybe they won't call you Dibyangana. So what's your name? What does it mean? All these new things. And I would say in those cases, we also have to exercise lots of compassion and empathy and patience and really taking time to understand from which place the other person is asking, how much capacity do they have to process anything of what we may have to share. I'm saying that because in my own experience in the beginning, I was a little wild, so to say, out of enthusiasm, right? So you're like, when you start, you're sharing too much, no? And you realize that when the other person is like, well, like paralyzed, it's like, okay, let's see if I'm talking too much. Yeah. Sometimes instead of talking too much, we need to just be there with the person, be ourselves and let our example speak more than all that we may. It's not that I need to learn the whole formula how to present theology and the philosophy to my parents in a weekend and so they are favorable or whatever. No, it's more about what they see. I remember when I started to go to the temple without going to live there yet, but it was my first visits, and my visits were just like going in the morning, staying the whole day, and going back to my house to sleep every day for many days. It was not a visit precisely. In one sense, I was already living there unofficially, and my mother was at that time going to an evangelical church in Argentina, which many of them, not all, but many of them are a little bit like, so whatever is not their church is basically a diabolic cult, no? And of course, we were not spared from that label. So long story short, these people were telling them that. And when I will go the whole day to the temple, people of the church will come to my house. and research my whole room to find for demonic items. Mm. So every time I will come from the temple, I will bring some small deity or some picture, and every next day something will disappear. So I was asking my mom, what happened with it? Oh, it fell and broke. Okay, but after 3 days, every single day was too much, you know? So I asked, what's going on? So she told me, you know, these people from the church are coming and doing their inspection, scan, demonic, Asuric scan. And they will find something and throw it away or take it. I was like, oh my God. I told my mom, because we are friends, like, why are you doing that? And you know me. I'm afraid. I love you. I said, mom, my mom, no, I'm afraid that you are doing something bad. I love you. I'm concerned. And these people is telling all this stuff. And my natural response was, okay, they say that I'm in a satanic cult. Do you see me like satanized or something? Mm-hmm. So I went to that. I didn't try to. No, mom, but the Bhagavad Gita says, and it was like, just, what do you see in me? Do you see me like crazy, weird? I said, she told me, no, I actually see you way better than ever. If I was satanized, it was before that. But no. So she immediately accepted, no, your example talks to me about something good. So that opened the door and said, okay, let's go to the temple and you just witness the life there of the other people and take your own conclusions. So she did. She went and she started going to the temple after that. Anyhow, so yeah, my point is with all this is it depends on every person, right? It's not like one official way of presenting the thing so everyone will be happy and accept it. One, as Krishna Chandra was saying, one has to be very personal and intuitive, and it's very relational. So, and it again all begins from being a coherent human being. No, probably they will first looking for that. Now, do you still remain a coherent human being, or have you gone completely mad? So, when they realize, oh, you're still coherent, you can have a commonsensical conversation. Mm-hmm. On that foundation, we can gradually bring other elements. Gradually, according to the other person's capacity. But again, always being very introspective about even why do I want to share all the things with other people? What's my motivation in sharing? It's really, how to say, pure compassion and well-wishing for the other Atma, or there is something else? Mm-hmm. Because many times there is something else. Mm-hmm. There is a desire to convince others, to have other people doing what I'm doing. I'm not saying it's your case, but sometimes those things come. No, insecurity. I have insecurity in my own choices, so I need all of you doing the same thing. So somehow that validates my own insecurity. Okay, I cannot be that wrong because everyone else is doing that. So we should be scan all those things and try to be sure that that's not the case. And whatever we share is out of a natural overflow of our own fulfilling and shared in a way that is relatable to other person, because for other people it may be a different language, a different planet. So we have to exercise lots of, I will say, empathy and being willing to enter into the world of the other person before opening our mouth and have an idea of where they are, what do they need to hear, how much can I share, why to share, and something. And again, main impact won't be so much what we say, but what we do after we open our mouth, so to say. The example we have in between our opening the mouth, because we can become also addicted to open the mouth and to learn how to open the mouth and to learn what to say as the perfect escape of what we have to do when we have to start talking and walking the talk, so to say. No? So I will say that, no? And you already are know the philosophy, you are learning more and more. So whatever in considering that, whatever needs to come, once one can start to present. But yeah, we need to, as we were saying the other day, sometimes we need to replace some words even for our Gaudiya Vaishnava community, we may need to stop talking about, I don't know, rules or other words we were talking. So what to speak with someone who is not at all familiar with our glossary? We may need to be careful about every word we use. And more about conveying our experience, right? It's, for me, that's the most. And the, conveying your experience through your experience, even. Not so much like I have to make a doctrinal exposition, a professional theological presentation to my parents on this weekend. And I come with a PowerPoint and I have all the things in play. But it has to be more normal. Sometimes we are not so normal sometimes. So, yeah. That's what I will say.
We have here, have you seen on this veranda where you were sitting under?
Machu's gifts?
No, under the just before, under this,
the table.
The table. Oh. And there is a verse written on the wood there. It's a very, very beautiful verse. Maybe you can go to check later. When Srila Rupa Goswami was in the Muslim government, he heard my Gauranga is around.
Mm.
So he wrote a letter, I want to come to you. You know, Rupa Goswami was already writing Hamsa Dutta, Uddhava Sandesh. He was like in a very intense mood. But can I come to you? Can I leave everything here? And the only answer Mahaprabhu gave was this verse. And this verse is actually an answer also, another answer to your question. It's so beautiful. Mahaprabhu said, look, like a wife in a middle-aged Indian village, this is what he was referring to. She has a lover, but she's married also. And it shouldn't come out. So externally, she's doing all the household work. She's doing everything.
Paka.
Paka. Exactly. But inside the longing is, oh, when can I be there? When can I run there? And so Mahaprabhu didn't say, you run, you come. You stay. And you know you have a secret lover. And I love this conception very much. You know, there is a secret lover. You know, I have a secret. And actually, when it's like kept a little, externally, I'm just acting normally. But inside, it's like a very deep treasure I'm keeping.
Yeah.
And like this, it can grow quite naturally. And I'm just a normal person externally in this world. But inside, something very intense can grow. And interestingly, Mahaprabhu, when he gave this answer, it was not just a behavioral answer, how you should behave. But actually, he gave to Rupa Goswami, in the first letter he wrote him, he gave already the ultimate goal of Gaudiya Siddhanta. How Radha and Krishna have parakiras, how they meet secretly in the kunjas. So it's very interesting. Externally, it was on his situation. You stay and you keep me as your secret lover. And when this is very intense from inside, Thakurji will rearrange all external circumstances. Not very naturally. But on the other level, he already gave the deepest teaching of his heart. Radha and Krishna meet in the kunjas of Vrindavan. So I love that verse very much. Secret lover.
To Raghunath Das Goswami, he says something similar.
Stira hana jau mahna hao batu. Krami krami.
Yes, Maharaj, I would like to ask one question. It's related to your book, which you wrote, Radical Personalism.
Okay.
Which, thank you. I really appreciate this book.
Thank you.
It's came. I feel it's really wonderful that you address so many points, which I think many devotees reflect on, but they didn't have like maybe a confirmation or somebody who is addressing so many points.
Mm.
And this is very valuable. It's in regard to the chapter Issues and Tissues.
Mm-hmm. Between guru and disciple. Yes.
You mentioned now that in the scriptures, usually when it is spoken about a guru, that it is like the ideal.
Mm.
But in the practice, it may not always be like that.
Mm-hmm.
That there could, that you say that, for example, one should only surrender to the degree to Sri Guru that he feels it is reciprocal. That it should, like, one shouldn't open up in a way that maybe it could be also open up doors for some misunderstanding, for even some abusive kind of tendencies. And then I was wondering, but I felt it doesn't look so satisfying, not that if we can only surrender to a person partially, if that is the case. Or are these souls then in practice very rare to find? And also maybe if you can elaborate a little more that how can we understand this, the relative aspect of Sri Guru, no? And absolute, how we should see that? Because relative, it may mean, yes, some small mistakes can be there, but if it is like a tendency which is unhealthy, then it cannot be seen as like a mistake. Mm-hmm. How should, for example, a disciple deal with such a situation?
You have 13 hours for here in the room. Need another retreat. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for the appreciation and promotion of the book. Thank you. And yeah, I think that's not the longest, but one of the longest chapters of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that's funny because I call it Issues and Tissues between Guru and Disciple. And when I say tissues, I personally would think about like layers.
Yeah.
But tissues are also this paper you use to clean, to grab the tears. And I eventually realized that most people were thinking that I meant tissues for that. No? Which, of course, is also applicable. But because in the chapter, I address more complicated situations between guru and disciple, scenarios where the guru may reject the disciple, or the disciple may have to reject the guru, or some dysfunctions. So there may be tears involved in that. But I referred to tissues, to layers, no? Different layers of the relationship.
Yeah.
So, So one point that probably, and I'm realizing because already a few people asked me about this, and that makes me think I may not have been clear enough in my writing there. So I apologize in advance. When I say something like one should only surrender to a guru proportionate to the surrender of the guru, so to say, I'm not saying that you have to like be calculating, no, before the guru, okay, how surrender the guru is, and I will only surrender these. Ideally, you should, at least according to your experience, you should feel that person is fully surrendered, which invites me to fully surrender. That's ideal. But I say that more like in, not so much like in a practical situation, but like as a principle. In other words, if someone is your guru and that person is not willing to surrender 100%, it's not healthy if that person demands that you surrender 100%. That was my mostly the spirit of that line. Not so much like, okay, you have a guru and you're like, okay, let's see how surrendered you are, and you put like a thermometer, scale. Yeah, scale. Okay, you are 75% surrender, so I won't surrender 100% to you. Also, how much, what's capacity we have to measure that, you know?
That also is,
right?
Yeah.
So my main point was, if one is already in a relationship, I will say, with someone, and unfortunately, that's not something I wish anyone, but if you eventually realize, and it's connected to your last part of the question, that the person serving in the capacity of guru is not doing his or her business properly, which is not the ideal. Nobody wants to be in that situation, but it has happened, to be realistic. Again, I don't want to sound like cynical, like saying everyone will be going through that, but also I don't want to be naive, saying, no, that has never happened, that will never happen, so no need to talk about this. No, I think there's a middle point in between those two where we can talk about that in a respectful way and honoring the principle of guru, but also being mature and have some critical thinking, because if not, so much abuse. As today in the morning we were talking, especially if we come from a culture who is enthroned on the top of the pyramid, sometimes over-idealized. I'm not saying always, but many times, in my opinion, it's my opinion, there's lots of over-idealization on the principle of the guru. Not like the guru must be a nitya siddha always. And as I like to say, how do you know if your guru is a nitya siddha? You have no way of proving that. If you have that faith, that's totally fine. I'm not against people thinking that. But just to make the case, he's nitya siddha, everyone's nitya siddha. My main question there is, what makes you have the need to establish everyone as a nitya siddha? Why you feel the need to go to that point? Why a guru can't be a sadhana siddha, which in one sense for me will be even more inspiring. Because, okay, at least I see someone who started as a sadhaka like me and is going through the whole journey and is giving me a reference, an example. But if everyone is need to see them, if everyone is coming from Golok, everyone is perfect already, so I have no role model to identify with. And that's discouraging to my faith instead of nourishing. You follow? So sometimes in the name of nourishing faith, we say everyone is nitya siddha. We may have that good intention, but we end up discouraging faith because everyone is over there. And of course,
and no one made the path from here to there.
Exactly. So it's like, so how to do it? How much my guru can empathize fully with my situation if he was never a conditioned soul and is absolutely enlightened forever? How much he understands me? Things like that, right? Anyway, that's in a way another conversation, but he's connected. And so I want to clarify that point regarding the proportion of surrender. I'm just saying, if a guru, because that has happened again, gurus demanding surrender, and many times this unhealthy demanding of surrender is a cover up for their own lack of surrender. So if one is in such scenario, it's not healthy to surrender to that. That's not surrender. That's maybe codependency or some form of toxic relationship. So that happens, again, happens. I've had some scars in that connection. Not some scars, also some scars, but some scars in that connection. So. There are so many, how to say, there are so many wrong reasons for which people look for a guru. Let's put it that way. Because it's not only on the guru side, no? A guru can do wrong. I mean, if you want to have a guru, main question is why? Why you want to be a disciple? Why you want to have a guru? There may be lots of wrong reasons to have a guru. You may be just looking for a guru for many personal unresolved issues, even from childhood. Looking for a father figure, looking for who knows what, some codependency. I'm not saying everyone, I don't want to make you go neurotic now thinking, I must be one of those. Maharaj is hinting at that. He's sending subliminal message to everyone here. I'm not saying that. But again, let's not be naive to think, no, that can never happen. Because that can happen. And that's more on our part. Okay, as a disciple, from which place I'm approaching a guru? Why do I want a guru? So that's another thing. But if we happen to be in a situation, I would say that we see there are some unhealthy issues going on. Of course, in the beginning, that will be confusing, bewildering, because yeah, I'm now speaking from my own experience, from my, what I went through. I don't need to go into the details, but that happened to me. So in the beginning, you cannot believe that that's going on, because that was not supposed to happen, so to say. And the last person you will think those things will happen was the guru, and you realize, okay, something is not. Of course, there are degrees of things, as we were talking, mistakes. There can be mild mistakes. And again, I'm trying to reply all the questions in the mixed relative absolute side. So the absolute side of the guru, I would say, is Krishna's, how Krishna is being expressed, Krishna's will and presence is being expressed through that person. These are words that Srila Siddhamaraj employs sometimes. Relative, absolute. He will use sometimes absolute for Samasti Guru Tattva, relative for Vyasti Guru Tattva. No? Samasti means the collective guru principle, and Vyasti the individual, or sometimes absolute relative meant the absolute is how the absolute Krishna is coming to us through that person. And the relative may be some, we could say, mild mistakes, acceptable mild mistakes that a guru may have. Like, in, for just basic examples, like, I don't know, a guru may, like yesterday I was, not today, today was
the date of the, when they were celebrating, no? Always in the wrong
time. Okay, we were mentioning that the other day. That's something. Or a guru may mispronounce a verse. Yeah. No? Samas was once there with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he said something and he mispronounced a word. And the devotees who were transcribing suggested, we should change the dictionary now, because Gurudev pronounced the word in this way, so that's a new revelation. And now the original usual word for that word should be canceled, because now Gurudev has given the absolute perspective of how to say, I don't know, tree. No? Gurudev said true. So now it's true from now on, because Gurudev has given that revelation. So and many devotees at that time, Srila Siddhanta will say, we're like, yes, that's such a expression of Guru Nishtha. And Srila Siddhanta say, that's Kanishtha, he say. That's a neophyte understanding of over-absolutizing your guru. Why you feel the need to go to that length, through that length? That's too much. He just mispronounced a word. And you should correct his mispronunciation in his service. So you are not losing faith. You are increasing the chance for offering seva. I can edit that word for Gurudev. And you know that he becomes less because of a mispronunciation of a word. That's nonsense. But sometimes I've seen devotees like that. Or like, oh, Gurudev was giving a class and he couldn't remember a verse, but I knew he was testing me. I said, no, probably he forgot the verse. That's okay. I mean, don't try to make it more. Again, the question is, why do you need to make that person so absolute and so perfect? In one sense, that takes away the humanity of the relationship. Everything is like always perfect, always like too much. It's not very intimate, very sweet, very realistic. You follow? And if you are in the platform of the guru serving that disposition, of course, one should be very careful not to give that idea to others, especially if you are not in a topmost position, because it's dangerous to have a bunch of people thinking you are absolute and your mispronunciation of words is divine revelation. How much you can keep yourself sane of mind in that situation. So mild mistakes are okay, are acceptable, but if some things that are a little bit beyond that are happening, as Krishna, Narahari Sarkar Thakur mentions in Krishna Bhajanamritam, he suggests if you perceive some deviation of whatever sort, something that your Gurudev is doing that shouldn't be happening, you should approach your guru in private, not make it public stuff, privately. And in service to him or her, you should say, Gurudev, you taught me this during all these years. So now you are going against what you taught me. So,
what's that?
Sorry?
What is this?
What is this? No, I'm confused. Please, can you explain it? And if it's, and I'm saying that in service to you. No? If the disciple thinks my guru, again, it's a very unsettling situation, even to think about that. No, it's so disturbing, right? It's not that, oh, I'm enjoying so much talking about this. It's disturbing, even to think about that. What to think if you gone through that? But again, it has happened. So it needs to be spoken about. So one knows what to do in those moments. Because if not, many times it's like, oh, no, I'm seeing a mistake in the pure devotee. I must be wrong. I'm offensive. And maybe it's a genuine mistake that needs to be addressed and someone needs to approach that person honestly and talk about it. You need to help that person by talking about it. You need to offer seva in that way. Because if I just don't say anything, I become accomplice to the whole thing. Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhagavatam say the same thing. If you see something going wrong and you don't do anything, you become implied, you say? Implicit in the crime, so to say, no?
Omission sunt.
No? So again, I know it's complex, I know it's difficult, because in the beginning it's like, how can this possibly happen? But you give time and you see this is still happening, this is still happening. Something needs to be done. Again, and I cannot give you just a magical formula. You do this and everything will be successful. It's so complicated, so difficult. But I will say it's important to stick with principles and values that one has received. And in service to that person, one will remind them, you taught me this. Now you're going against that. Please go back to the proper path. As you taught me, that's how Krishna, Narahari Sarkar Thakur presented how the disciples should approach the guru. And he says, even if after that the guru is deaf and blind and doesn't want to follow and continues like doing things in the wrong direction, then one needs to take some distance from that person. Not with resentfulness, not with hate, not with gratitude for whatever one may have received, but also healthy distance, because if not, it becomes a toxic relationship, no? Codependent, dysfunctional, who knows in which way. So, and again, one has to exercise some discernment, because if not, you will not have any critical thinking and you will think, oh, my guru is whatever, abusing ladies. No, that's his Rasa Leela. I mean, I've heard that. I'm not making a joke. I'm just saying what things that I've heard. I'm offering Madhurya Seva to my Gurudev. Things like that, no? Like, means like you didn't get it. No, you didn't understand the teaching properly. No, that's not healthy to think like that. No, that's abuse. So we need also to have our own discernment, our own criterion, because if not, we just are opening the door for any form of abuse, and anything can be justified. If you have that type of over absolutistic idealizing mentality, I mean, anything goes. No? Everything is lila. You can create horror. So one needs to have some criteria to know, okay, till here it's a mild mistake, till here it starts to become something else, and I need to take care of my integrity, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and to help the person also, not to continue cheat, like betraying himself, herself, and confusing others as well. Again, I'm giving a very generic answer. Every specific case is unique and it may require specific things to consider. And again, it's so delicate that I don't want to treat the topic lightly, but also neglect the topic altogether, but also give an answer that this is the only way to deal with this. No, it's this case is unique and needs to be addressed very personally. Yeah. Some of you were raising your hands. Meanwhile, I was talking. No, okay. Does it help?
Yes, thank you.
I should tell you something else that comes to mind.
Just a small, we had a sadhu here just recently. And, you know, he's like trained in Oriya culture. And then we talk, you know, and it means also a certain conduct between ladies and men and like this, a certain distance. And then explain to him, look, it's not functioning like this. If you want to put Oriya culture in a religio perennis, in a Sanatana Dharma and an eternal function of the soul, this will not work. And his reaction was, he learned this his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a certain conditioning, but I liked his reaction very much. He said, this is very interesting. So, you know, he might have learned something which was not healthy, what we wouldn't consider very healthy, but it's not a way of defending it,
but
saying, wow, this is really interesting and I learned something.
But he had the willingness to learn and open to recognize.
And I think this is like the basic promise we give to the Lord when we start our path. I will be corrected at everything and what my mind and my conviction tell me, this is not the truth. I'm ready to expand. And it's the more one is advancing in the pyramid, the less often this happens. Maybe on the first day you come to a temple and say, yeah, I really want to learn. I didn't know many things. But normally from the guru sides, it's not so, because it's this picture, you should have it. Know everything, but it's such a beautiful attitude, and it's actually very inspiring.
Yeah. So we're talking today in the morning again. Arad Vyasa learning from Sukadev, always a learner. Yeah. Yeah, I think the main point is, as you say, that this sadhu had the willingness to acknowledge and be willing to learn. The problems when you are stuck into an absolutistic perspective and nobody can, you are not listening. You're, again, you became frozen at the top of the pyramid, so to say. There's nobody else there. Isolation. So there's no, no peers, no people to talk to. It's just you.
Kalyan Mitras.
No Kalyan Mitras, no friends in the journey. Just you and cheerleaders. No? Cheerleaders? Ruchir,
I want to ask about surrender to Krishna. Like we say, for example, I have heard in Chaitanya Charitamrita some story. I have not read, but I have listened and heard that one of the five Parishad of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has a family. But then he used to go in the Ganga, and like he said that if Krishna won't take
care of
if you don't take care of my family, I'll go to jump in the Ganga.
Yeah.
And then like these kind of examples. So I want to understand, like,
should we do that at home?
No.
Okay.
That, yeah. But we understand that, okay, God helps them who help themselves. Like we need to do some effort from our side and then God will give the help. So can you put these two things together, like what a person should be doing? Should one give efforts to earn money, wealth or something, and be secure, or be like
Or jump to the Ganga. Yeah. Should we imitate Sribas Pandit or not? I'm joking.
Which level?
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. Right? I think the answer is in the question. To which level you can do anything, it depends on which level you are. No? So that's the way Adhikari Janishta Saguna Parikirtita. We have to exercise on a daily basis this Swadhyaya, which we were talking in the morning, like meditation on ourselves, not in a narcissistic way, like I will meditate on myself. And I will be introspective, like where I am, which is my capacity. Can I say what Sribas Pandit say? Probably most well say, no, that's too much. So it's okay. You don't need to imitate that. You don't need to torture yourself because you are not there. I cannot imitate Raghunath Das Goswami's daily standard. It will be like superficial if I try to do that. But at the same time, I'm inspired by that. So how to take the essence of that lesson and apply it to my present circumstance in a way that is sustainable, healthy, and challenging also, all at the same time. Challenging enough so I'm not in a comfort zone, I'm not complacent, I'm not cheating myself, but also sustainable enough so I'm not going crazy, neurotic, burning out, over exerting myself, and it's like in the name of surrender, because that happens a lot also. In the name of surrender, we run away from surrender at the end. So that was not the idea, because surrender is a process, it's a gradual process, not that gradual, but gradual. It's as gradual as we want to make it gradual, because sometimes we can also abuse all these words, like it's gradual. And when Krishna or the cells like invite us to grow, Maharaj, Prabhu, it's gradual. The process is gradual. No? And you use only that word to defend you and not do anything. So that's not the idea. So again, depending on which is one's situation, which is one's nature, one has to act accordingly. And some people will need to have some financial security and will need to have some level of comfort to be balanced as a human being in their psychology. So on that foundation, they can engage in bhakti from a healthy place, not as that being the ultimate goal. No, my house, my car, my everything, and that's the prayojan. No, that's something that I may need to have in place for me to be balanced enough psychologically to channel my rounds. No, if for some people, I know for some of you may not be a concern, but for most people, if they don't know where to sleep this night at night, they will be a little anxious about it. For you go 23 here in Ananda Dham, you have no problem. But for most people, if they don't have security in terms of where I will spend the night tonight, is there food in the fridge for tomorrow? I mean, for most people, they need to have some certainty about that. And again, we are not condemning that. But also, we have to be careful not to make that the ultimate goal, or to become addicted to be certain about every detail of everything. So also be willing to let go. So yeah, you have to find your place, your capacity, your needs, in a way that it keeps being challenging also, that you are willing to do some effort. And I wouldn't say that we make effort and Krishna's help. Krishna helps, because that doesn't paint a nice picture of Krishna. Okay, you make an effort and I help you. You make no effort, I don't help you. We were talking this day, Krishna loves us unconditionally, infinitely, even when we say God does not exist. So he's trying to help us, even when we deny his existence. So I will say that when we make an effort, we realize how much he was helping us. I wouldn't say when we make an effort, he helps us. What he was doing before then, I don't help you. I'm indifferent. No, he's on an urgent campaign, as Srila Maharaj would say, mad search. So he's extending himself as much as he can, loving us ourselves unconditionally, infinitely. But until and unless we make some proper effort, we may not be able to feel that, to realize that. And when we make that effort, we access, wow, that reality. And as we talked the other day, just one last thing that comes to mind is you, because you are talking about surrender, and for us, surrender, Sharanagati has these six aspects. And one is the Angi, and the other five are the Angas. Now, Angi means like this, the main thing, and Angas are like extensions of the main thing. Now, so the Angi of Saranagati is Gotritve Varanam. I don't, maybe we already talked about that, so I don't remember. Certainly. But yeah, we can always talk about that. So that means to accept that Krishna is maintaining me. And it's not just saying it. You have to leave that. On some different levels, but you have to leave that. Again, one big point for me is what we were talking these days. Krishna loves you unconditionally. That's the ultimate maintenance. It doesn't mean that maintaining me, he will be providing me food and roof. The main maintenance is love. That's what maintenance ultimately. So he's already loving me. He's maintaining me. To have deep trust in that. Like Siddhartha Krishnaji was referring to his father in that spirit. Like he had that trust. So we have to, wherever we are, try to increase that central aspect of Saranagati. You know, Krishna's maintaining, Krishna's loving me, Krishna's in my favor, Krishna's not against me. As simple as that sounds, he's in my favor. He wants the best for his, my best interest is in his mind more than it is in my own mind. So I have to pursue what I feel I need according to my acquired nature to be balanced enough so I can engage in bhakti from a healthy, sustainable place. And all that can be part of my surrender. Krishna Chandraji.
Maybe just a word.
Yes.
This is a wonderful example of like two different levels. Now, Srivast Thakur and Eternal Associate of Gauranga and Mahaprabhu, they just have loving exchange. And at that time, it's not so much about teaching for us. It's just we relish the wonderful exchanges they have. Mahaprabhu asking, you have so many children, how you can maintain them? I don't see you working. And he just clapped the hand. You know, first day means first clapping is first day. If you don't come and provide as you promise in the Gita, I will all fast. Second clapping, we fast the second day. Third clapping is that we fast the third day. And if you dare not come, you just jump in the Ganga. So what is this? This is not a threatening.
Imagine saying that in front of your wife and children. Because if you don't come today, I kill myself. It's okay. It's that.
So, you know, one has to see the extreme loving exchange. She was talking about, you know, naturally it will come. It's not a question. This is just a part of a rasa exchange. And if I transport the transmoral exchange between Gauranga and his eternal devotee, it's just always on my level. How should I act? Sometimes, you know, things on the level of Leela are mostly there just to appreciate, oh my Gauranga, oh my Srivast Thakur. How wonderful, you know, and they even tease each other like this. But this is Sanjali Bhakti, you know, it's extremely beautiful. And here in this world, I'm born. Nahi kaschit kshanamapi. Krishna says in Gita, look, even for maintaining the body, there's so much work needed. And just do. And then slowly, slowly, we become a little more, you know, we know, oh, we can, we doesn't need so much. We can reduce, especially through spiritual knowledge. One understands, I don't need so much. Before, one was filling inner holes with things. So this is an unlimited endeavor. So, but, and then, you know, I always feel everything is part of the way. It's not that, oh, just I have work to earn some money. It's a part of my way. So what kind of mentality I can learn Siddhartha Krishna said this morning about the sun. You know, am I acting and earning my money in that way? I'm a giver. Do I have sarva hite, sarva bhuta hite rata? You know, this passionate help to give something another being. Krishna speaks this two times in the Gita, this phrase, in the sense of a karma yogi, because he doesn't feel any motivation to do a thing and also no motivation to not do it. So what is then the thing behind? You know, it's a complete different mood. So we can check ourselves, and I would not always expect the spiritual tradition. And when I read Chaitanya Charitamrita, how can I manage my daily life? You know, there are some things I think I can manage my daily life. I can survive, and slowly, slowly, it will become more simple and easy. But the main topic is relishing. You can understand that sometimes to level. And I'm a little careful not to bring these levels always too quick together. Otherwise, we start to understand all Leela just as on a moral sense, on a behavioral sense. How should I behave in this world? But there's another level of our spiritual life, naked appreciation.
Thank you.
You agree?
Yes, totally. Yeah, not to reduce the Leela to our moral quandaries. Yeah. And not to force ourselves to be on the level of the Leela if we are not ready. That would be a form of sahajis and without bad intention. So yeah, but it's a great point because there are so many of those Leelas. And many times, especially sometimes we find some eccentric personalities in the Leela with eccentric behaviors. So yeah, we are asked, so what to do with that now? How does it apply to my life? And so I appreciate that. Yeah, we can admire, appreciate it, even be inspired by that as a very extreme example of something, but not feel that urge that it have to be there. How that applies? What's the message for my daily life coming from the jumping on the Ganga? We need to become expert to translate those things into time, place, and circumstance. No, that's about, and has this expression, desha kala vibhaga bit, many times, which means bit means like a knower, so or a seer, no, a knower of time, place, and circumstance. No, we must all become knowers, develop like a sensitivity to filter whatever comes to us through time, place, and circumstance. Not only through their time, place, and circumstance, but according to ours as well. And that's not diluting the message, it's trying to relate to it in a realistic way that is inspiring and nourishing. Yeah. Srivas Pandit Ki Jai. Yeah! Just in case.
Yeah, I want to add something. I try to live this when I'm getting too enthusiastic. Starting to run away in my mind, then I remind myself of the other Indian tradition with which I started my spiritual path. And in this tradition, a balance is very much emphasized. It's called a middle path in the tradition, and founder of the tradition says that if you are not a monk, a renunciant, before you sit down for practice, you are basically allowed to organize yourself for things to sustain your body, which is housing, clothing, food, and medicine. And then when these absolutely basic needs of the body are cared for, then your mind is much more quieter to sit down. So it's okay to be in peace with that. And having a body, you have to spend as a lay person to take care of it, so you can allow yourself that. And this gives me then peace when I think, oh, I sleep too much, I don't spend enough time.
Yeah, I'm even translated that in terms of the yama niyamas in the Yoga Sutra, which come before sitting, so to say. And some of those are ahimsa, the first one. So you have to behave with yourself in a way that is non-violent, because ahimsa is not only towards others, you know, like be loving with everyone and kill yourself, and torture yourself. And then comes satyam, no, truthfulness. So I'm being honest and truthful with where I am, which are my needs, which is my present capacity. So again, all the things have to be in place before sitting for meditation, prayer, sadhana. So yeah, conducting your life in a coherent way. Yeah.
So my question is, according Prem Krishna Chandra today told us Prem is like working like a snake, like never directly.
Sorry, again.
It's working like a snake, like never directly.
I quoted that to you today.
Yeah, also.
Yeah, we were talking today in the morning, remember?
Tell
you love moves like a snake in a crooked way.
I understand that even more when the gopis are, when Krishna is present, they're like always criticizing him, we're not very friendly, and in his way, they start praising him. I would like to understand that better, because in my human understanding, it's not really nice.
Okay. Krishna Chandraji?
You know, the word gopi often is translated as a cowherd girl. But actually, it's a person who has a very gupta. It's something very deep and has a very deep a treasure in the heart. So, and if you, from the point of view of rasa, you know, to be a little more indirect, not always direct, actually has much more flavor in it. You know, I can say, you know, here is Mohan, such a, my old friend. I said, you know, I could say, I have a very dear colleague, and he's somewhere here. And he has a little messy dhoti.
now we know who you are talking
about. No, but just a little, like some, you know, little this inner, and this is so much more. Okay. And because love, that is always directly expressed. If someone has to say I love you all the time and on every letter, actually it means a lot of insecurity. I want to keep you. Can you please stay? But you know, if it's like there's so much love and it's unbreakable and it cannot ever be shaken, and then on that level there can be much more variety. It's not very, I love you, and please don't go. There is a huge variety of expression. And this is what the gopis have. Sometimes I think, you know, if a person is very insecure, and I make an invitation, I'm an insecure person, and I invite you all, and I want to have a good impression of me, and I have to make everything very, very nice. Because I need that you have a good impression of me. But if I'm a multimillionaire and have so many, many friends, you know, I just make an invitation and I'm with a lousy dress here and there's only a little dried bread. You can dare such things because there is inside nothing to lose. It's because so, and then you see who is really my friend or is just coming because of the swimming pool. You know, it's very because of the things I have. So in a similar way, Krishna, look, if you go now to Vrindavan, it's the abode of the Lord, then it should be very, very nice. Many years now, it's of course a little crazy Kali Yuga, but before, the sadhu said, look, in Vrindavan there's only sticker bushes, Dornenbüsche. And wherever you walk, you have some thorns in your foot. Mm-hmm. This is the home of him because he's such a wonderful person. He doesn't even need the first impression extremely good because he has a security and he doesn't have to present himself. There is much from there, so much more can come. You know, I love that very much. And that's why the gopis act like this. It's so much more love involved. And you know, it's unbreakable. No one will ever walk away. And then I can try many, many things. So many more things can be said. And there's no insecurity in it involved. This is just one aspect.
Yeah, I mean, I will clarify, because you use the word always, that the gopis are always like that. And it's not that always. There are different modes. And it's important to understand that the spirit of the gopis is anukul, which means whatever is favorable for Krishna's pleasure at any given moment. So it's not that they are consciously, I mean, when they get angry at him, ultimately it's to give him pleasure. It's not out of our, it's not from the place we will get angry here, right? Out of emptiness. They are getting angry out of fullness. And to give, they know in this moment Krishna will enjoy so much. I don't know, when Sri Radha plays hard on him, so to say. And she knows how to be hard and play hard and make herself like unavailable to him. But also, she knows where to break that, where to give up that mood and invoke another mood which will enhance the experience, not only for Krishna, but for everyone. So it's important to understand the. This background psychology of all this joking and being angry and criticizing and playing hard, whatever it may be, is always how we can increase the experiences, Krishna Chandraji says, of rasa. Mm-hmm. No? And especially with this idea of anger, so to say, or loving peak, man, all these different words we have. There are many verses in the scriptures which describe how Krishna enjoys more those moments than any other form of expression, and how the gopis resort to that for his pleasure. Again, there is a very nice section that I always like, that very clearly, of course, is spoken by Sri Radha, but somehow by extension it describes the spirit of selfless love from the gopis, but especially from her. And she mentions there how, yeah, when Krishna, when she needs to be angry for Krishna's pleasure, she is the first one in line to do that. Mm-hmm. When Krishna needs some particular type of attitude in service and nobody's providing that, she will put all of them to the side and take the first line and provide that. Although externally it sounds like, so arrogant you are. But she's just now offering herself in service. And she will say, I don't know, if Krishna will be happy with some gopi, I will make all the arrangements for him to meet with her. I will become maidservant at her house, even if she's from the competitor's group. I will become maidservant at her house and make the arrangement for her to provide Krishna the enjoyment that he wants. She basically says that Krishna's happiness is the goal of my life. In one line, she says that Krishna's happiness is the goal of my life. If Krishna is happy embracing me, I'm so happy in that embrace, because I know he's happy. If he's embracing me and I know he's not happy in that embrace, I'll do whatever I can to be free from that embrace, because that's not giving happiness to him. So always the psychology goes in terms of providing pleasure to the object of one's affection. That's basically the translation of seva. Seva, because sometimes we say service, and it becomes like a very loose term. I will do service. What does it mean? Sometimes it just means doing stuff. Clean the pots, wash the kitchen, whatever. Do service. But seva means to give pleasure to the object of my affection. Now, there has to be a very intentional element there. It's not just external stuff that I'm doing with my body. What's going on inside? Is there anukul yena, Krishnanu silanam? No, there's anukul, favorable intention. Bhakti is very intentional. It can be so intentional that Yashoda will be chasing Krishna with a stick to beat him, but her intention is such that that's considered pure bhakti. No? And Kamsa is 24 hours absorbed in Krishna, but her intention is so negative that that's not considered bhakti. Although the goal of scripture says think man mana bhava mad bhakta, the highest instruction of the Gita, Krishna say, always think about me. And Kamsa was doing that, but not with the proper intention. Yashoda was chasing Krishna with a stick and tying him with a rope, which may appear in all newspapers as a dysfunctional mother. But if you understand her psychology, you will end up praising that form of pure Vatsalya prayer. Anyhow, some thoughts in addition. But trying to keep in mind that no matter what their attitude, which form that takes externally, chastising Krishna, praising him, that's all for in the service of the collective experience of rasa and loving for all involved. Yeah. I remember last year we were celebrating Radhastami, and then before that we celebrated the appearance day of Lalita Devi, and we were sharing some of the things Lalita Devi will say on a daily basis. And that's hardcore. That's intense stuff. But again, if you really understand the intention behind that, that's like such level of expertise, you know, in serving the need of the moment. Yeah. Anything else before we conclude? Or we conclude here, whatever.
It'll be very fresh tomorrow.
Yeah, it was a long day, intense.
Can you conclude if I can get that?
Yeah. Yes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Harinam Prabhu ki jai, Shri Gorgadalar ju ki jai, Shri Raghavinda ju ki jai, Shri Gopal ju ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Shri Ekadasi ki jai, Upavasa ki jai, Gaur Pramand Hari.